and welcome to Echoes from the Shore, Lessons from Diverse Marine Values, a new podcast from the Diverse Marine Values Project, funded by the Sustainable Management of Marine Resources Programme. For 3 years, the Diverse Marine Values team has been exploring the many ways people value the sea and how these values can be integrated more fully in marine management in the UK. This podcast will give you hints and tips about how to use a diverse suite of methods to understand the relationship between people in the ocean, coast and sea. You'll be hearing about some of the insights, challenges and findings that the team has uncovered, with lessons for you to use these methods in your own research and practice. We hope this podcast series can help to develop capacity across the UK's marine research community and foster new pathways for inclusion of diverse values within marine policy. I'm Dr. Emma McKinley, a senior research fellow at Cardiff University.
And I'm Dr. Victoria Leslie, a research fellow at the University of Portsmouth. And in each episode, we'll be initiating a conversation with researchers from the Diverse Marine Values team to understand more about working on this unique project. Welcome to the next instalment of Echoes from the Shore podcast. Today we are joined by Professor Tim Acott from the University of Greenwich and Dr. Stephen Jay from the University of Liverpool. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
Could you both introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about your role in the project? Should we start with you first, Tim?
Hey, thanks very much. So as you said, I'm a professor in human geography at the University of Greenwich. I co-lead the Diverse Marine Values Project, and I'm also the work package lead for this sort of theoretical conceptual work on the project as well. I have a long-standing interest in cultural values, ecosystem services, but more importantly, I suppose, over about the last 10 years, I've been increasingly interested in how arts-based approaches can be used in the context of understanding values and places. And within that broader context, I'm very interested in how concepts like assemblage theory or actor network theory, how we can sort of start using these concepts in a not just a conceptual way, but in a practical way as well.
And Stephen?
Hi there. Yes, I'm Stephen Jay at the University of Liverpool. I'm a reader in marine planning. So marine planning is my main area of interest. That branches out into all things kind of coastal and marine as well, really. So I've been quite interested in coastal resilience recently. But one of the things I've been particularly interested in doing is trying to bring wider spatial theory into the kind of marine and coastal world. So Tim just mentioned assemblage theory, which is something that I've been looking at in a bit more detail. So my contribution to the project has been really to work alongside Tim on those theoretical frameworks and seeing how they might help with our endeavours in this project.
Thank you both for those introductions to yourselves, but also the roles that you've played in the project. It's really interesting to have you here to talk to us about that kind of more theoretical, conceptual underpinning, because we've heard from our test sites, we've heard a lot about the methods that have been used in the project. But this is really around that conceptualization of working together, of transdisciplinary and of assemblage theory. So Stephen, could you explain to us, as people who maybe don't know what assemblage theory is, could you tell us a little bit about assemblage theory as a concept?
Sure. Yeah, well, I would say it's a way of really trying to understand how things come together and then work almost as a coherent whole. And when I say things, well, they can be just about anything, really. Physical materials, one thing, or organic beings like people, but also social aspects such as whole communities or policy processes, let's say. And even psychological aspects, actually, including, of course, the thing that we're really interested in this project, people's values. They can be thought of as part of the assemblage as well. And what tends to happen in an assemblage is that certain things are selected for inclusion and others are then excluded. And the way in which they are selected for inclusion is through some kind of underlying purpose, or desire is the word that's sometimes used in the theory. And then those things kind of resonate with each other and they hold each other together in some way. All sorts of complex processes might come into that, which we won't go into right now. But then the important thing is that the assemblage tries to maintain its coherence and be a unity, you might say. But at the same time, adapt to new circumstances and try to fend off threats as well that might disrupt it. Now, it's all a very complicated theory, which obviously we can't go into in detail now, but it's based upon the work of some French philosophers, Deleuze and Guattari. And it's been taken up in quite a few fields, really, including human geography especially. So, you know, trying to use it in our project has been challenging, but I think valuable as well, actually.
Thank you. And building on that, Tim, could you maybe tell us a little bit about why and how assemblage theory was decided on as a framework for use within the Diverse Marine Values Project?
I think that's a very good question. And it kind of goes back to the early days, actually, when we're writing the bid. And so we're trying to think about a project where we're talking about diverse values, and values in this sense can span lots of different ideas and concepts and can connect lots of different kind of entities of different types. And so what I wanted to be sure is, as we were putting the bid in, we weren't just falling into a trap, if you like, of relying on just kind of conventional science dominated frameworks in order to try and understand this diversity within the project. I wanted there to be flexibility within the project that could allow us to be able to see how different methods, different approaches, different people, different case studies era came together in different ways. And I think Stephen's already introduced assemblage theory very nicely. He talks about it's coming together, talks about sort of processual elements, about sort of a sort of assemblages as in states of becoming, of kind of spitting up, of holding together. And I think those terms were very resonant in terms of its design for an interdisciplinary project like ours. We didn't, because one of the problems is, if you start from the position where you give priority to a science-dominated framework, then that is going to influence the visibility of different methods, approaches, voices, different ways people are understanding. And so I wanted a framework that we could use that would allow more of a multiplicity of voices and approaches to be able to come in and think about the arrangement of those in different ways. So it was quite a pragmatic idea, I think. And I think that associated with that, though, you know, there are, in terms of the sort of practically bringing that into the project, of course, it isn't just like adopting another method. It's not like you're sort of saying, oh yeah, well, we're just going to have assemblage theory as another method, because actually it challenges some kind of quite deep-seated ideas of ontology and epistemology and underlying philosophical assumptions about things. But we can come on to that in a bit more, but hopefully that gives you a flavour of why we thought assemblage theory was appropriate in the context of the project.
That's really, really interesting, Tim. I was going to ask Stephen about how assemblage theory has been used by others. And you've mentioned to us before about another project that you might want to expand upon now.
Sure, yeah. Well, I did mention it's been used quite a lot by human geographers, but also archaeologists and, in fact, people in all sorts of other social science fields as well. But one area which I think is quite closely linked to our project is some work that Tim and I did, in fact, when we were looking at seascape. And seascape is quite an emerging field, particularly useful in planning circles, because if you can try to capture the value of certain seascapes, then you might want to try to protect them as well from harmful activities or development. But the way in which seascape assessment, as it's called, is carried out, it is a bit clunky, really. It's following, well, I don't know, quite a scientific approach, which doesn't seem to capture sufficiently the more social and cultural elements of seascape. So Tim and I had a great time looking over a bay in North Devon, in fact, from a headland, and trying to interpret it from an assemblage theory point of view, and also to interpret the assessment process that had gone on for that bay. And it's really quite instructive, because from an assemblage point of view, we're able to say, okay, there's all these different features which combine to create the seascape of this bay, the natural features, the land form, for example, the sea itself, or the vegetation, the physical human features as well, such as housing and such like. And then all the social features, such as people enjoying the beach, and surfing and swimming and rock pooling and all this kind of stuff. And then all the kind of historical and cultural overlays as well, the importance that was given to that place over time, that continue to be kind of laid on top of it. So from a kind of assemblage theory point of view, you start to be a bit more selective. Say, okay, which of these things are really important in creating this sense of assemblage, and which in fact are perhaps being left out? So that was a very interesting way of looking at it. And it was interesting, for example, that there's lots of modern housing there as well, but that was all kind of conveniently pushed to one side when it came to the formal assessment. And it's as if the assemblage is kind of pushing them out. So we don't want you, you don't belong here, you're spoiling this sense of this beautiful bay that you're trying to convey. And more expressive elements as well. So there was a pole on one of the headlands, in fact, near where we were, which went by the famous name of Baggy Point, I think it is. And people used to come and take photographs there quite a lot and stand by the pole and have their photograph taken against the bay. And so this simple physical pole had not just material dimension to it, but also a kind of expressive dimension, that it was being used to allow people to express the importance that they gave to that bay. So, you know, just in terms of that simple example, I think we can see how assemblage theory is starting to open up new ways of looking at it, kind of new lines of inquiry, if you like.
Thanks, Stephen. That was really, really interesting, the work that you and Tim have been working on together. And did that, that's led to a publication, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. I don't know if we're allowed to promote our publications in this podcast. It's one called, I've forgotten the exact title, Tussling with Assemblage Theories, that's right. And then Seascape Character Assessment is in the title as well. So if you search for my and Tim's surnames, then Assemblage Theories, I'm sure it will pop up if you're interested in looking that in to find out more detail about that particular study.
It's called Tussling with Seascape Character Assessment and Assemblage Theories.
I've forgotten the name of my own paper, or our own paper, how about that?
Published in the Journal of Environmental Policy and Planning. Not that I'm reading this off a screen, of course.
And we'll put a link to that in the podcast notes so people can access that. So Tim, I wanted to think about how assemblage theory has been used by others, and to think a little bit about how assemblage theory has helped us to understand transdisciplinarity on the project and the ways we've been working together. I didn't know if you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think it's I think it's a very good question. I think it's a work in progress at the moment. I think this is precisely what we're trying to do, is to try and bottom out some of the ways that if we're thinking that we are working in a transdisciplinary way in the project, then what are some of the underlying assumptions of that? You know, what is transdisciplinarity? What is interdisciplinarity? What is a discipline? I think if you start to answer some of those questions, for instance, like what is a discipline, then you start to realize that knowledge and power are intimately connected, and that you've got the way that our knowledge is framed in a disciplinary perspective, but also tied to institutions as well, and the way that institutions will reinforce those disciplinary perspectives, whether or not it's the Royal Geographic Society or other institutions, or particular universities. So I think that assemblage theory, if you like, again, it almost offers a way of trying to sort of think about the coming together of those different perspectives, the way that power is saturated across those different disciplines, that permeates individuals, that permeates practice, that permeates process, rather than just kind of, I suppose, thinking about it in a more mechanical sense and saying, oh, we've got an ecologist and an economist and a human geographer. And so we wanted to sort of try and get some way that we could have a more reflective way of understanding that boundary. And I think it starts to come down to some really practical implications. For instance, the way perhaps that we prioritize certain forms of knowledge over other forms of knowledge, in particular in marine governance and in the marine world, which is what diverse marine values is all about. The kind of the knowledge that's often prioritized is ones associated with concepts like natural capital, ecosystem services, and that dominance is resulting in a particular way of looking at the world and thinking about the world. And I think that assemblage theory, by offering this kind of perspective of understanding how things come together, the way that desire is embedded in those relationships and the way that desire drives those relationships, we can begin to think about this in a more reflective way and start to ask the questions. Okay, well, if these institutional frameworks are prioritizing certain perspectives over others, then what's missing? If we were to sort of like turn that on its head, are there other ways of understanding diverse voices, different ways that values are expressed? And are we really dealing with an assemblage where in some instances these things are being stopped from coming into the assemblage, where the assemblage is being formed because of the countervailing forces and the pressures of that of that kind of territorialization priorities of the way that different disciplines operate, the way that different frameworks operate? So I think that on that kind of abstract kind of conceptual level, there's a whole range of ways that something like assemblage theory can be used to frame transdisciplinary in a way that helps to break us free from a kind of dominant hegemonic methodology and starts to allow spaces for other types of engagements. But of course, it is another world then to try and get that accepted or into a broader policy context and I can talk a little bit about the problems of that, but I think that's for me one of the ways that I think it can help. It was actually really just, it was during the course of this project working with Stephen that I first read Ian Buchanan's take on assemblage theory, and it was that idea about desire being central to the concept of assemblage, and I just, that really spoke so kind of loudly to me. And think, because often, you know, particularly in this kind of marine management world, you know those kind of emotions and that desire that you try and push those to one side, you try and remove those from your analysis, you try and make your decisions based around objective, you know, criteria, etc. And I think there's just something spoke to me quite strongly about this idea of desire becoming front and center of the way that things operate and the thing that drives things, whether that be human desire, non-human desire, it can be manifested in many different ways. Anyway, sorry, bit of a long answer there.
I don't know if I can follow on, Tim, because we did ask our team members, didn't we, questions about this. Thinking in terms of the transdisciplinary experience of the project members and how that might be interpreted in assemblage theory terms. And they came up with some really interesting points, really. So coming back to your point about desire, and that was one of the questions that we asked, you know, what is people's underlying purpose or desire, if you like, to work in this transdisciplinary way? And they were saying all sorts of interesting things, like it's just so important to take into account the diversity of social values in decision making, and for example, but also to draw together not just different academic disciplines, but also practitioners and academics who each have their various backgrounds. And all this helps us to overcome our own narrow perceptions and maybe engage better with communities as well, in fact. So they also come into the transdisciplinary mix so that their various values also come to the fore. So, you know, I think this is something that we experienced actually as we went through the project. And also coming back to the point I was saying before about assemblage theory, it has this, as you mentioned, a multiplicity of things that come together, or elements, if you like. And again, I think from our project experience, that was very evident that we were bringing together our own attitudes and understandings and disciplinary expertise, our epistemologies, but somehow they kind of mingled with the physicality of the project as well. And in particular, when we were looking at our three case study areas and the different geographies, for example, that those case studies embodied, the different policy processes, the different social experiences, all of these things kind of come into the transdisciplinary assemblage, you might say. And then there's a question of how they kind of work together, how there's a resonance really between some of these different things to create a sense of an overall assemblage. And really at the heart of that, I think, is this openness, this inclusivity, this willingness to learn from these different perspectives within these very particular geographical contexts. So it was really a very rich experience, I think.
Thank you both. That's really great to hear about how the concept and the kind of thinking around assemblage theory has been used to feed into the project. And I think some of the comments you made about really drawing in multiple views, multiple methods, recognizing that it's not necessarily just academic thinking, but also practitioners and communities, it really speaks to what was at the heart of the Diverse Marine Values project. And I think you've both alluded to the fact that perhaps the application of assemblage theory and using it to feed into policy and decision making is still something that requires a little bit more work and a little bit more thinking. So it'd be really exciting to see how that continues to develop. It'd be great to invite you both to reflect on your own experiences of working in this kind of transdisciplinary project, and perhaps how assemblage theory as a concept, if you want to draw on that, like what the challenges have been, what the benefits have been, and maybe to kind of end, any advice that you would give people on who would maybe be thinking about embarking on a project like the Diverse Marine Values, and what kind of recommendations you would have for them. So Tim, I'll come to you first, and then I'll come over to Stephen.
Thanks very much for that. Working on the Diverse Marine Values project has been a wonderful experience. It's been and that's been driven partly, at least, because of the team of people, because of the individuals that have been involved, and that generally, overall, the individuals have been really willing to try and think differently, engage with new ideas, and engage in a very kind of rich discussion about topics and ideas and etc. And so that's made the whole process, I think, of working in a transdisciplinary space easier. I think that when you get individuals that are very closed and very unwilling to step into other people's shoes or try and see things from a different perspective, that can be a real block. So I suppose in terms of advice for other people, it's to try and create the safe space, if you like, to have these open dialogues, to have a very empathetic communication between different people, where you're always thinking about trying to prioritize the views of other people and establish places where people can talk about their own disciplinary perspective from a point of strength rather than a point of feeling kind of victimized. Oh, well, my discipline isn't really valued. So I think that's but I think underlying all this, and it's not in any way a criticism, I always feel it's difficult to find in projects such as these to find space to have really in-depth discussions about the underlying kind of issues, because there's always, I think, a bit of an emphasis about you're firefighting for time, you're trying to get multiple things done, you've got to get the next objective completed, you've got to get the next bit of research done or whatever. And it feels like that creating space for some really kind of in-depth conversations about transdisciplinary issues, about issues of philosophy, ontology, epistemology, but then creating the space whereby those become relevant to people. So they're not just abstract concepts that people don't want to talk about. So I think that's a real challenge. And we did it in part as part of this project, but I think it's always a challenge for me, I suppose, is trying to get under the surface and to get people to engage in really in-depth conversations, particularly if maybe it's a trained scientist who perhaps, I think social scientists, and you know, I don't want to start generalizing here, it's terrible, because the minute you start generalizing, you get into all sorts of hot water. So I don't want to do that. So in fact, I'm going to stop doing that, and I won't do that. But just to say, I think that some people are more, are easier to kind of engage in those deeper reflective conversations. But actually, ultimately, I think everyone can benefit from having really, sort of deep thoughts about issues and the way that we think about the world and reality. And they're not just abstract conceptualizations. They have real impact on our kind of everyday, day-to-day experience.
And I can concur that assemblage theory and thinking about transdisciplinary working and the questions that we were posed definitely made us do some deep thinking and some like brain bending thinking about how we were working together as a team and what our desires were in terms of our interest in the project and what we hoped to get out of it and how we were working together. So I think there was definitely that stretching and that willingness to stretch our thoughts actually as a project team, which was great to see. Thank you, Tim. Stephen, your thoughts on that final question?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's all about the fusion of the material and the non-material. And this really reflects different disciplinary backgrounds. So saying, for example, to natural scientists who are used to working, you know, with very material worlds, to think beyond that to social and cultural realities and worlds, really, and see how they actually intermingle with the very kind of physical worlds that they're used to looking at. And that's a challenge in itself, but equally saying to social scientists and people from arts and humanities backgrounds as well, you know, to think about the, you know, the physical world as being a reality. I mean, call me neorealist if you like, but that's okay, you know, but somehow bringing together these two very different ways of looking at the world around us and inviting them to step into each other's spaces, really. And that's challenging. But it was great in the project to see the willingness and the enthusiasm of team members to do just that. And, you know, the excitement, really, about the prospect of doing that. I was particularly impressed by some of the responses, you know, to our challenging questions, as you put it. People saying that, you know, they wanted to be part of this project because it would challenge them to step outside their usual field of working, and they were looking forward to that prospect, and I think, you know, that was borne out in practice, really, in the way that the project kind of unraveled. So, you know, it really is that being willingness, that willingness to, you know, step outside and step into somebody else's shoes, if you like, and try to see the world from their point of view. And that being a very creative process. And certainly, you know, when we, for example, were asked to do a bit of performance art, well, that, you know, pushed the boundaries for me. And it was a great experience to do that. So I would just say, see this as a fantastic opportunity, a creative process, and let yourself go, really, within this kind of transdisciplinary way of thinking and working.
It's really great listening to you both, but just to pick up on some of the things you spoke about creating space for conversations, getting under the surface of a project, and this concept of encouraging us all out of our disciplinary comfort zones, I think really resonated throughout the project. And I think really ensued from the conversations that we were having around assemblage and transdisciplinarity. So all that remains is to say thank you both ever so much for talking with us today, and for such an interesting conversation.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us. If you're interested to learn more about the Diverse Marine Values Project, please visit our website, which we'll link in the show notes, And tune in again for the next episode in this podcast series.
The Sustainable Management of UK Marine Resources Programme is funded by the Natural Environment Research Council and the Economic and Social Research Council. The Diverse Marine Values Project is one of six projects funded to explore new ways of forging partnerships and approaches to marine management in the UK. For further details, please visit the SMMR website.